We're back from the break. It's the long break, but we're back from it. We got three games on the schedule tonight. This is Tuesday when we're recording this At The Rink podcast. Seven tomorrow. It's Winter Classic week, our last episode of 2021. Sean Rourke, are you ready to dress warm for the Winter Classic? It's going to be 1 degree on Saturday. One. High. One.
As we say in my quaint Rhode Island accent, I have the parka ready.
Ours don't exist.
No. So it's the parka. But yes, I will be dressed warm. But Dan, I was at the Edmonton game, the first one they ever did. Beers turned into slushies, minus whatever it was. Everybody had a great time. Cold. You overcome it.
Hey, man, I'm not skating. I'm going to be in a warm press box. Are you kidding? This is, you know, that's the way to watch this game, if you're asking me. But it's going to be, I mean, it's going to be great because it's the Blues, it's the Wild, it's the Winter Classic, it's prime time on Saturday night, and it's obviously the main event, the big event of the year. We're coming off of a break here, and you've got 70 games postponed as of right now because of COVID, and they'll be made up. A lot of them, the bulk of them in that Olympic window that was the Olympic window from February 6th through the 22nd. But it's just, to me, Sean, I think I have a hunger for hockey coming back after a 6-day break. And to get a big main event just a few days after the league returns, I think is huge. It's exciting. It gives you something to really look forward to break in 2022. And it's supposed to be cold. It's the Winter Classic. It's supposed to be cold. And I'm really looking. I mean, it's going to be exciting to be there, but I can't wait to see the visuals of it and what people are going to see on TV too, because it's a celebration of the state of hockey.
Yeah. And it's going to be a great game. You're talking about two Western Conference powerhouses. I don't know if that was the case when this game was planned out, but it certainly worked out that way. Where Minnesota is an elite team in the Central Division, as is St. Louis. I mean, they're battling for the top spot. It's a game that's going to be a spectacle, but it's also a game that's going to be two huge points as we move into the new year and teams start to try and figure out who they are and where they are. It's a measuring stick game for each team.
Yeah, big time. I totally agree with you. And you got two teams that are right there at the top in that Central Division. All right, but we can talk a little bit about that a little later. We do have Kevin Weeks from the NHL Network and ESPN. He will be joining us. We talked to him, so we'll play that interview shortly. But Sean, first, Braden Point, we'll go current events. Braden Point should be back for the Tampa Bay Lightning tonight, Tuesday night. He missed 14 games. They went 11-2-1 without Braden Point. By the way, that's also without Nikita Kucherov. And if you go back to Kucherov's injury, his lower body injury, they're 18-5 without Nikita Kucherov. The machine rolls on here for the Tampa Bay Lightning. They've got 44 points, the most in the league. They're second in points percentage behind the Carolina Hurricanes, but they've got the most points in the league at 44. Sean, we always wonder, like, you know, is there going to be hiccups? Where is this team going to get hiccups? You know, there's none here. And right now they have Andre Vasilevsky and Brian Elliott in COVID protocol. So they're going to be playing Maxim Legacy tonight. And they brought in another guy too. Sean Day is going to be making his NHL debut. It's just whoever comes in just does the job for the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah, well, because there's so many key high-end players that even when you miss a couple, I mean, look at it. It's unbelievable that Point is missing and Kucherov's missing, and they're scoring at a prodigious rate. But they're strong down the middle, right? And that's what hockey teams are made out of. Victor Hedman is a Norris Trophy caliber defenseman. You know, Steven Stamkos is having a career resurgence, and you know, you're almost brokenhearted for the guy. We talked about this last week with no Olympics. He doesn't have that opportunity anymore, and you don't know how much of, you know, trying to put up his best foot forward for the selection committee had to do with this. But he's got 35 points in 29 games. It's nothing to sneeze at all. So, you know, and then there's other guys that understand their roles. And to me, that was the difference early on when Tampa Bay was struggling. It wasn't their big guys. It was their identity lines that were struggling. It was that reconfigured third line. It was that fourth line that were so successful during the playoffs that had to be reconfigured, and then kind of taught what their responsibilities are. And now they've gotten into that comfort zone where you can plug and play, and everybody kind of understands what their role is and what they need to do. And then until today, you have the best goalie in the world to cover up all your mistakes. So it's going to be really hard to knock this team out just from the mental toughness that they've built in the last 2 years.
Yeah, look, we got so long to go, and you got to get to the playoffs, and you got to grind through the playoffs. But I mean, a three-peat's certainly not out of the question for this team. And you'll see it, to me, it's a question of what do they at some point run out of gas, right? And I think having Point miss 14 games, having Kucherov miss 20 some odd games, or now it's actually 23, and he's supposed to be back in January. So it could get up to 27, 28, 29. This is going to end up paying dividends to me for the Lightning when it comes time in the playoffs, because now they got guys who don't have the same miles on their bodies as, you know, some others. And Kucherov, we saw last year, missed the entire regular season. He was dynamic in the playoffs, right? They continue to find a way to win. And we don't give enough credit, Sean, to coaches who coach really good teams. A lot of times we talk about the Jack Adams Award, and we talk about the guy who has helped turn around a team in 1 year, right? So you hear, you're starting all of a sudden hear about Bruce Boudreau with the Vancouver Canucks because they're 6-0. Oh my God, look what Boudreau's doing, right? They were so bad under Travis Green. Now look at them, coach of the year, right? What about John Cooper? I mean, can we just give a little credit here? And I know he's in COVID right now, COVID protocol right now, and not coaching tonight, but the idea of a coach who has a system and has a culture, and they that allows them to plug and play, because when guys come in, they just know exactly what their role is supposed to be and they play that role. I think John Cooper, it's no surprise to say he's among the best, if not the best in the league, but I just think sometimes we don't give enough recognition and credit on an annual basis to the guys who coach the really, really good teams, because it's not that easy to continue to do this year after year after year. And they're going on 6 or 7 years now of being an elite team under the same coach.
Yeah, but you sit down and have this conversation with the guy at the airport bar on your way to Minnesota, and he's going to say, I could coach the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Which is wrong.
You roll out that top line, that second line, you know, make Victor Hedman play 30 minutes a game, and you got it covered. It is wrong. And until last night, I thought I had the perfect analogy for when you brought this up. He is Sean Payton from the Saints.
Right. Well, he can't go off the third string quarterback and expect to win against the team that's rolling like the Dolphins.
But he's the same
kind
of coach. He's got that same personality, detail driven, makes it all look so easy, survived so much stuff this year and last year, and you know, moved on from a franchise player and never really missed a beat. Like, he's that kind of coach that is calm all the time. In the eye of a hurricane, he's just like, oh, well, it's going to pass and the sun's going to come back out and we're going to be better for it. And I think that's what this team needs, right? And he also understands that you don't play Victor Hedman 30 minutes a game, no matter how much you want to as a coach, as a competitor. We can win this game if I double shift Victor. Well, are you going to win the war or are you going to win the battle?
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to win the war, then maybe you strategically lose a battle or two, or you put other people in a position to try and win that battle for you. And that's what he's done. And if you look the way guys have moved up this lineup as it's gotten reconfigured in free agency and everything else, you know, guys have taken on more responsibility. Killorn, all of those guys, they're young defensemen. Ross Colton, who scored the game-winning goal in the Stanley Cup final last year, has a much more prominent role and will continue to as this team reshapes itself after another tough year of free agency. When you think about elite teams, they get changed because everybody wants their piece and they want to go someplace and they want to be the man. But there's always players on the Tampa Bay roster that can become one of the men when those other people leave. And so give Cooper a lot of credit, but give Brisebois a lot of credit. Julian Brisebois, their GM, and even Steve Yzerman before that, they've built a self-perpetuating machine here where there's five guys in Syracuse right now that could play in the NHL and there's just no room for them.
Yeah, 100%. And I hate that argument of, well, I could coach this team. No, you couldn't, because it takes a lot to continue to coach teams of guys who have won and believe, and you know, and in some cases believe that they won because of you know, what they were doing, not necessarily what the coach was doing, but this is a team, and it has been for a while. And another guy like that, Mike Sullivan, right? So I did the storylines. It's up today on NHL.com. What to look for in between basically now and the All-Star break, which is, you know, February 3rd. So one of those teams, well, two of those teams, but one of them, Mike Sullivan, is another one of these guys from the Pittsburgh Penguins. No surprise that Sullivan was supposed to coach Team USA. Cooper was supposed to coach Team Canada at the Olympics. Obviously, they're not, because the NHL is not going to the Olympics. But Mike Sullivan is another one of those guys, calm in the storm, right? Just, you know, stares at it and says, I can handle this, sees all the things, almost like a beautiful mind type of thing, right? Sees all the, you know, all the machinations here of what can happen. And look at the Pittsburgh Penguins. They're coming out of this break, riding a 7-game winning streak. They're fourth in the Metropolitan Division. They're looking good. They're 10-point difference right now between them and the Columbus Blue Jackets, who are fifth. Again, the Pittsburgh Penguins rolling, and they're going to get Evgeny Malkin back, Brian Rust back, Jake Guentzel back. Mike Sullivan's another one of these guys that deserves a ton of credit. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how a team like Pittsburgh rolling into the break, or a team like Nashville rolling into the break 7 in a row, how do they come out of this break? You know, did they lose momentum, or does it matter to them? And my guess is a Mike Sullivan coach team, it's not going to matter to them.
No, I don't think so. And it's been really interesting this week, if you're a hockey junkie, to kind of watch how teams are going about getting ready again. A lot of teams are running almost mini training camps. I think Minnesota came out, and the first day they just played 3-on-3 for fun to get their legs going. Boudreaux and Vancouver ran a mini training camp, and he had to, because he has to get his system in place, right? Sullivan kind of did a hybrid of both, making it interesting, but re-emphasizing some points and trying to work some players back into, you know, his roster. Yesterday he had Malkin on the wing, and he had the Evgeny Malkin, who's finally in a contact jersey, which means he should play soon. It won't be in their next game, but soon into the new year he should be good to go. They had him on the wing on Crosby's line, and that had the media in Pittsburgh salivating, and Sullivan tried to tamp that down pretty quickly. It's not going to be a McDavid Dreisaitl type of thing, but coming back into practice, it's allowed coaches to kind of play around a little bit and almost hit the reset button. And I don't know that you have to worry about the players, because they're so hungry. They want to play hockey again. It's not one of these cases where they're coming off a long summer break and you got to get them back going. Most of these guys are chomping at the bit to get back to some sort of normalcy.
Yeah. And the normalcy is the abnormal for everybody right now. I mean, I think I heard it was a Dougie Hamilton from the Devils said, sometimes they don't know until like 5 or 6 o'clock on the night of a game who's in, who's out, just simply because of, you know, all the testing that goes on and whatnot. But that's just the way it is. You got to play through it. I mean, that's life, right? You know, we got a lot of guys coming into the league right now because of all the guys with COVID, you know, in COVID protocol, who you may never have heard of, but it's an opportunity for them. It's a chance. You're seeing it in other sports too. The NFL, you know, we're seeing it obviously, and you're going to see it in the NHL as we resume play. But back to the Penguins, to me, Sean, I look at them and I say, and I think I mentioned this last week, I kick myself for doubting them, because I constantly do, yet they constantly prove me wrong. I wonder though, with Malkin coming back in, what kind — it's not a disruption, it's an addition, no question about it. This guy's an all-timer, right? But now it involves another layer for Mike Sullivan and his coaching staff to work this guy back in into a proper role, finding the right fit on a team that is rolling right now. But that's where a guy like Sullivan, or a guy like Cooper with Braden Point and Nikita Kucherov, that's where they're so good, because they allow for patience. They allow for, you know, things to play out. They don't rush to judgment necessarily, because they trust their instincts and they trust the players that are coming back. So now it's going to be interesting to me to see, where does Malkin slot in? How does Sullivan do that? And how long does Sullivan keep with line combinations once Evgeny Malkin is back in? Those are some things I'm going to be looking for from the Penguins as we roll into January here.
Yeah, for sure. But just like Tampa Bay, in the interim of waiting for Malkin to come back and some other players, is they found some really useful players that make them much deeper when they realign, right? Evan Rodriguez has 23 points. Nobody's talking about him. It's one of the great stories of this year. 10 goals, you know, was a guy who couldn't find a place in Buffalo, highly touted coming out of college. And then, you know, same thing, Kapanen. They traded for Kasperi Kapanen, and they've kind of got him back on track. 16 points. Danton Heinen, who's been all over the place, has kind of found a role with them. And they've been playing extended minutes and you know, more than maybe they expected when they came in because of the injuries. And now they can slot down and make that team a much more dynamic team because they won't be asked to swim in the deep end. They can swim in the shallow end where they're more comfortable.
Yeah, that's what we look for. We always find those angles, those stories, right, as we get to toward playoff time. Why is a team all of a sudden look so deep? Well, that's this is a big reason. We're seeing it with Pittsburgh. You're seeing it with Tampa Bay. You see it with other teams. I wanted to flip it out west, Sean. Are we going to eventually see that with the Vancouver Canucks? Because they are a team, like you mentioned, Bruce Boudreau, right? Mini training camp. The team rolled 6 in a row under Boudreau before the break. The break, I think, is, you know, and I mentioned this in my mailbag that comes out on Wednesday, that I think that's a good thing for this team because it does, like you said, allow for that mini training camp, allow for systems to get in. Nothing, it doesn't have to be on the fly anymore. He's got that team doing what Boudreau teams do. They're aggressive on the forecheck, right? They speed through the neutral zone. They generate off of turnovers. They generate off of the rush. Do you see this continuing for the Vancouver Canucks, or are they the team that the break came at the wrong time because they were rolling and they were feeling so good? And they don't have the pedigree of the Pittsburgh Penguins. They don't have the pedigree of the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know, that's another team I'm watching. Maybe the one I'm watching most out west. And I do like to stay up late and watch late night games, so I will watch them. Just how do they come out of this? Because they haven't played since December 16th, right? How do they come out of this? Can they keep rolling and climbing? They are closer now to fourth in the Pacific Division than they are to last, even though they are in seventh place. So that's a good thing, but what do you think? I mean, with Vancouver, are they a team that we're going to, the break is the bad thing, or it does not matter?
No, I don't think the break's a bad thing because now they've had a taste of success after so much misery for so much of the year. And you want to perpetuate that. I think for Vancouver, what you need to see is, you know, we always talk about Bruce Boudreau and the Boudreau bump and how he wants to attack and wants to drive offense. If that's what you're doing, then that's the perfect system for Pettersson.
Mm-hmm. And Besser.
And it hasn't been. Mm-hmm. He's got 2 goals in 6 games since Bruce took over. He's got 4 points. He does have points in his last 3 games. So, you know, maybe he's starting to find it. But he has been a shell of the player that we all raved about coming into this league. And he's a huge part of what they do. It was him and Quinn Hughes. And Quinn Hughes has been brilliant. I would argue to me that he's a front runner. For the Norris Trophy, just because of how bad Vancouver's been and how good he's been for them. If you look at his numbers, they're ridiculous, especially, again, it's an outdated stat to a degree, but his plus minus on a team that was just leaking goals and he's their number one defenseman is, you know, in the pluses. So I think he's been brilliant, as good as he's been since he's been in the NHL. But they need help, and that help has to come from Pettersson, and it hasn't yet. So I'm curious to see the freedom that Bruce's system allows, how quickly that translates to a guy like Pettersson, who is streaky and is really hard on himself. You know, the few times that I've spoken to him in situations, you know, where he hasn't played well, he doesn't even want to talk about it because he's so down on himself. Even when his team wins, it's hard to get him to do that. So, you know, he's a guy that needs confidence, and Bruce is a guy that can give it to him, but it's got to happen quickly here.
I'm glad you mentioned he's hard on himself, because he's a guy, I wonder, as you just listening to you talk, is he a guy that the pressure has gotten to him? You know, I mean, you know that market, right? That's a tough market. They're all over you in that market. You know, fans, media, they are all over you in that market. They love you, absolutely love you, if you do well, as they have for Pettersson. I mean, he was the new Sedin, the third Sedin, whatever it is, right? And now they don't love him so much anymore, but he is hard on himself. And he's a guy, I wonder, has the pressures gotten to him where it impacts his game? You're right. I thought he would be a guy that instantly took off under Boudreau's system, like we've seen with Besser. Like Brock Besser is instantly taken off under Boudreau's system, but Besser's a guy, he can be aggressive on the forecheck. He can go create havoc in the corners, and he's doing all those things, right? and he can, and he, you know, he can score. There isn't a, you know, he's a goal scorer too. Whereas Pettersson's more of like that playmaking type, skillful type of player. I still think he should be thriving in Boudreaux's system and maybe eventually will, but I wonder about him and feeling and being so hard on himself. If the pressure really in Vancouver has gotten to him, and it's hard, man, it's gotta be hard to unleash it from yourself.
Yeah. I don't think it's a external noise that bothers him. Like, yeah, Vancouver's a hard market to play in, but he is so internally driven that I think he's harder on himself than any outrageous Vancouver fan can be. He expects to be the best. The guy he reminds me of in the league, who, he's a couple of years younger than him, is Patrick Laine, right? He's that same kind of, he came in full of bravado, thought he should be the number one pick. I'm talking about Laine, and really took off, and then kind of lost his joy for the game, right? And he ended up being traded. He questioned himself. He didn't know what was happening with his game, and he still hasn't found his game from that low point. You know, you look at him now, he hasn't played because he's been hurt. He's got 10 points in 9 games. You started to sense there was a little something coming, and he's supposed to come back soon, but it was never the Winnipeg crowd or the Columbus crowd. It was always that internal just drive to be the best, and when you're not, you just want to break things, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can't, there's other guys in this league that can go through a slump and you would never know it. They show up at the rink every day and they laugh, and the sun's going to come out tomorrow and I'm going to score 4 goals, and I'm going to joke with my buddies. These guys aren't that. They're it eats them up when they're not doing what they've done their whole lives, which is impact games, win games, score goals, be on highlight reels. When that's not coming, it's really hard.
Laine is different in the sense, though, that like he's a goal scorer. Like he's a pure goal scorer. And he relies on a player like Pettersson. They don't play together, but he relies on a player like Pettersson to do it, to get him the puck, to put him in the positions to score. For like, not a knock on Ovechkin. He's an all-timer legend. I think he breaks Gretzky's record, but for years he's relied on Nicky Backstrom, right? Especially on that power play. And you need pure goal scorers, need that guy. I'm not 100% sure Laine has that guy, in Columbus either, right now. Pettersson is that guy to do it for others, to set everybody else up, to do all, those types of things. And we're just not, you're not seeing enough of it, I guess. It's 25 games under Travis Green was a rough go for everybody. It's still a small sample size under Bruce Boudreaux. I'm curious to see, is he more comfortable coming out of the break because they've had a little bit of extra time to work on things, to get language done? He seems like one of those types of players that, appreciates the practice time and needs practice time to get a full understanding of everything that they're doing. And once he has it, he's electric. He's all world. So it might be, they're a team to watch. No question about it. Last one I wanted to get to, Sean, before we go to Kevin Weeks, Tuukka Rask, another one, right? Tuukka Rask could be coming back. Bruce Cassidy even said January 18, he targeted a date for the guy. He hasn't even signed yet. He targeted a date for the guy to be playing. I mean, it's not like Ullmark and Swayman have been that bad. The Bruins, they're not deep right now. They're just not that deep. They're not the same team we saw. But Ullmark's got a 252 goals against average. Swayman's got a 229 goals against average. These guys haven't been that bad. But I think once Tuukka Rask comes back, it just the energy just comes back to the Bruins. I think that's going to happen.
Yeah, they haven't been bad, but neither one's played in a big game in their entire lives. A meaningful NHL game where things are on the line and you find out who's good and who's not. Tuukka Rask has been in that crucible forever, it seems like. Cassidy came out today. They just had their availability a little while ago while we're taping this and said, maybe we'll send Tuukka to Providence. And again, to your point, like, might want to sign him first.
Yeah,
right? He's like the most famous e-bug that's ever lived. Speaking of which, Tracy Myers, our colleague, has a great story on the rise of the e-bug this year with everything that's been going on and all the guys across the league that have – been the emergency backup goaltenders and kind of some of their backstories. And it's a great read if you get a chance to read it. But yeah, you know, look, they're talking about sending Tuukka to Providence, and all signs point to the fact that they're going to sign him. Swayman's young, and I'm not sure how all the rules are going to work with the taxi squad and who can play on it and who can't. Most teams are going to carry a third goalie now, like they did last year under more strict taxi squad rules, where you had to have a goaltender and you had to have other guys to protect you from COVID. But most teams are going to carry a third goaltender. So Tuukka is certainly going to give them some options. And you know, may the best goalie win at that point, as far as who's going to take the job. But you know, those veteran guys, those Bergerons and those Marchands who have one or two kicks left at the can, want to go into battle with the guy that they know. And that's, and again, that's no offense to either of the other guys. I'm sure they're wonderful human beings and those guys like them, but there's a security blanket. And I think Tuukka Rask is that security blanket for the Bruins. Unless he's for the Bruins, but not for the Bruin fans.
Right. No. Tuukka's not coming back to be a third goalie. Like, Tuukka's coming back to play. He's going to be the Bruins number one. There has to be some type of assurance, as long as he's healthy and playing well, that he's going to be the Bruins number one, or else why would he come back?
I could see a platoon. I don't think he has to be the number one at all. And I think his play on the ice will determine that. I don't think you can make that kind of insurance. You could say, you know, if you play well, clearly you're a preferred choice, but you need to play well. I don't think anything gets handed to Tuukka, and I don't think Tuukka wants anything handed to him. So, you know, he's going to play into that role, but he certainly has that opportunity.
Yeah. Platoon. I should say that platoon, sort of like he had with Halak for years, you know, for the last few years, is just that, you know, you ride the hot hand for a little bit, but the other guy's got to get in there, you know, and that system has worked for the Bruins.
And maybe Tuukka's at the age where he is Halak now, where he's the mentor. And, you know, unless he gets really hot, the games are being split and he's kind of grooming younger goaltenders to eventually take his place. But in Tuukka's mind, that's all going to happen after he makes one more big run, at least one more big run.
Yeah. I don't see Tuukka Rask as the guy who's like, I'm here to groom young goalies. It's not his personality.
Yeah. Well, no, but you'll be surprised, because somebody did it for him, right? Somebody did it for him. And that's the way of a professional athlete. You do it. If you don't, you're not respecting what came before. You can be sour about it. You can, you know, not look like you're enjoying it, but you still do it.
Well, you might not have a choice. So there, anyway, it's something to look forward to, definitely, with the Boston Bruins. But let's get to a former NHL goaltender doing a lot of great work with NHL Network and ESPN, Kevin Weeks. We were able to catch up with him, caught up with a lot of different topics with Kevin Weeks. Here is that interview with Weeksy. All right, we got Kevin Weeks, NHL Network, ESPN. He's actually driving up to Bristol right now. You might hear his navigation system, in fact, as he drives. Kev, how are you? Are you excited for hockey to get back here? We're getting going here again. The break is over. We got games coming up. And, I mean, how'd you handle it? And you ready to get going again?
Yeah, no, it's first of all, happy holidays to you guys and all the listeners. Merry Christmas, happy holidays across all denominations. And yeah, pumped. It was a much needed little time off, if you want to call it that, you know, between my spouse and I. We don't get very much off time based on our jobs and stuff. So it was good to recharge the batteries. Got a chance to get up to see some family in Toronto, and then kind of had a Christmas between there, New Jersey, New York, and then in Miami. So literally just flew back to Jersey and driving up to Bristol through New York right now. So all is good and excited for games, more importantly, to be back and to see our players showcased and see them doing all the great things that they do.
I feel like we have like the back of the airplane tracker. We're going to be able to track you on your way up the West Side Highway. All the listeners are going to be following your path as we go.
Yeah, you might be able to track me. That's great. That's more support. That's cool. That's more support. That's like being a goalie. You just have more people playing around you when they show up to play in front of you.
Exactly. Hey, a quick question for you before we get into all the news and everything else that's going on. What's your gig at ESPN been like?
Yeah, it's been awesome. I think number one, it's great for our league to be on the worldwide leader in sports. And I think it's amazing to showcase all the amazing talented players that we have across our league. on a nightly basis. I feel like ESPN Plus is something that a lot of fans are still trying to navigate and get used to, but it's an amazing offering. I mean, I'm not selling anything here. I don't get any commission, but for what amounts to about $6 a month, I mean, there's more hockey and other sports and all sports than people have the time to consume. And that's for us being in the hockey business. So there's a ton of games. There's a ton of content, all the studio shows, The Point. We also know that, you know, of course, traditionalists like my parents, my dad was just asking me, like, when can we watch you tonight? What time are you on? Because they have one of our dishes from Jersey up in at my parents' house in Toronto. So trying to navigate the new world for some people that are accustomed to linear and that watch only or primarily on linear, and then augment that to be able to give fans choice. You know, life has changed for people. A lot of people are busier than ever before. They love on demand. They love being able to kind of customize that to their schedule and their lifestyle. It's not everybody gather around the TV at 7 p.m. the way the world used to be. So, and the way we grew up. So I think it's been incredible, you know, to be able to have it on all the different platforms, stuff on SportsCenter. You see Emily Kaplan, Bucci, myself, any of the other talent, I think, just showcasing our game. And the same thing even with TNT. TNT has been a nice partner for us as well. And those two big networks are going to help to drive the growth of our sport, both for the casual fan, the new fan, and the diehard fans alike, and for our players and those of us that are in the game. I think it's great.
I don't know of a guy who may be more plugged into players and managers and coaches than you are. So there's a lot going on in the league right now. Obviously, it's all run by COVID, and there's uncertainty almost every day. Give us a sense of the player mindset now. I think, you know, just understanding what's going on and having to just roll with it. How do these guys do that? Because hockey players, for years as we've known them, are creatures of habit, you know, and routine. And that routine is thrown off almost every day now. So how are these guys handling it?
You know, that's a great question, because any elite athlete, you know, elite business person, any person, film, TV, that's really on their game, or any, even mom and pop restaurant, any chef, anybody that's really on his or her, their game at an elite level, a lot of that comes from their very schedule, their commitment to their schedule, their commitment to excellence, their regimen. And it's no different with our players, you know, with players and coaches and staff and trainers and everybody. But I can tell you, man, from all of them that I speak to, and a day doesn't go by when I don't speak to, you know, upwards of 10 people in the game in different roles. And it's crazy. Like, I mean, I was just talking to Tampa's goalie coach, France Jean, who won, you know, they won two Stanley Cups there. He's got the best goalie in the world that he helped develop in Andre Vasilevsky. France was practicing for Tampa yesterday. Like, he literally was in the net and he made an unreal glove save. I think I retweeted it yesterday. Kevin Woodley and the guys from In Goal had tweeted it and I retweeted it, and France and I were going back and forth. And I mean, the flexibility of mind that it's taken for these players and their family members and the staff and everybody involved is beyond extraordinary, because you're right. And I always say this, players and athletes and people in the business and in any business, you're so regimented. It's almost like you have your migration patterns. You know, it's the exact same thing. This is what the Wolves do. This is what the Bears do. This is what the Deer do. And this is what, in our case, hockey players and hockey people do. And so much of that has been disrupted. So a lot of them that I've spoken to have been upset by it, of course, but they know that this is kind of part and parcel of the way things are. And they've been very, very strict in terms of adhering to the protocol. But I can give you an idea of, you know, from game to game, practice to practice, even pregame skate in the morning till going back home to get the nap or going on the hotel on the road, you don't even know if you're in the lineup, let alone who else is in the lineup. You don't know who's going to be behind the bench. Like, honestly, there's so many variables right now. And I really have to commend them for how they've conducted themselves and in respect of each other, in respect of the health and safety protocols, but also factoring that into their professionalism that they bring to the table. And, oh, by the way, going out to do their jobs, among the best in the world to do it. It's crazy. So I really have to commend them.
As such, I guess it's not really a surprise that a lot of the veteran successful teams like the Lightning, the Bruins, the Penguins have been more successful since the world's kind of turned it upside down this time, as the surges have happened and we've postponed games and we've seen so many players go into protocol. Having a mindset of dealing with whatever adversity comes your way certainly is paying off now.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, because this is adversity that in our lifetimes, many of us have never experienced. And, you know, we all have our own version of that. Sometimes it's family illness, direct family, indirect family, friends, loved ones, coach, community member, siblings, whatever the case may be, for sure. And, you know, for somebody like myself, like I never had an easy path of playing hockey, being a black goalie and trying to carve out a career, you know, would have been easier athletic endeavors for me to do other things. But everybody deals with it in their own way. But right now, you're right. This has been really challenging because there's so many unknowns. There's so many twists and turns, to your point. And those teams that are more veteran teams that have maybe had to go through heavier grinds up and down the roster in different ways, that like Tampa, for example, that certainly helped them. St. Louis, as you mentioned, that certainly helped them. They had to do that en route to winning a cup, the Blues and Tampa too. And, you know, there's still guys in our group that have been to three since the 2015 cup. So all of that to say, I can tell you firsthand, I just kind of alluded to it for me, when you have to deal with adversity, it forces you to be creative. It forces you to be resilient. It forces you, as Tim Grover would say, to be relentless. It forces you to be, you know, resistant as much as you can. And outside of that, there's still a person inside of that jersey or that sweater, that uniform. There's still people. So these are real life situations. I mean, I can't tell you guys the amount of people that haven't seen family members that were separated for 2.5 years, 2 years, haven't been able to make it home for funerals, for births of children, either their own at times and or those of, you know, siblings or other extended family members, graduations. I mean, I'm glad you guys are asking the question, because I always say there's an intersection between life and sport. And oftentimes people don't necessarily recognize that if you're not in the business of sports, but they're really intertwined, both life and sport. And as a result, there have been some crazy things that real life things that have really impacted, much like people that aren't in the world of sports, but they've impacted those of us that are. And again, I really have to give the staff and the players and, you know, the extended people around the game and media types, our colleagues and everybody. There's so many people, medical people, that deserve a lot of credit, because this is not, let me put it to you this way. This isn't guys just playing pickup at Sky Rink. Like, yeah. You're not playing shinny in Wayne, New Jersey. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is guys' lives. These are their careers. This is how they feed their family members. This is how you're able to, you know, help a parent or your parents retire. It's how you're able to maybe help a young sibling that's in a place like Metro New York or back home in Toronto or Vancouver or Miami or wherever, where real estate's super expensive, to help them buy their first home. I mean, there's a lot of different players don't just play for themselves. So in a nutshell, it's been a really crazy time, more unprecedented than any lockout or work stoppage that I've ever been a part of. And those are crazy because you can't regain those years nor that compensation. But in a different way, this has really been wild for so many of us in the world, both in and out of the realm of sports and out of hockey. And I can't commend them enough for how well they've handled themselves through what's an unprecedented, crazy time.
Very well said, Kevin. And the good thing is that we know there are three games currently on the schedule tonight, Tuesday night, 7,
yes,
Wednesday night, and we're back on it. So let's get back on the ice. And I wanted to ask you, so Sean and I touched on the Pittsburgh Penguins, a team coming out of the break with a 7-game winning streak. The Nashville Predators also have a 7-game winning streak coming out of this break, and they look like a different team now under John Hines. What's your take on the Predators? Can they keep this up? Are they legit?
I think the Preds deserve a lot of credit. Heinze and the staff have done an outstanding job, but I also say where they deserve a lot of credit is how they've developed UC Soros, how they've kind of concierged him through the transition with Pekka, and how great Pekka was to him at the end of Pekka's incredible career, and how that's been literally a seamless transition. Like, there aren't a lot of franchises where that's happened. I mean, we see it with the Rangers, with Shesterkin, now that our boy, my good buddy, Henrik Lundqvist has retired. It's rare to have a great that's that great and then transition the way that they have. So I got to give them a lot of credit. Can they keep it up? Yeah, I've had a few of their games for ESPN, and they're playing a different brand. They're playing harder. They're harder on the puck. They're harder on the forecheck. some of their more talented guys who you expected to be better and should be much better have been. Started with Matt Duchene. It's been a renaissance season for him. He's attacking the middle of the ice more. He's not pulling up and dipsy-doodling as much. He's attacking the goal line more. He's getting to the net more. Granlund's had a fantastic season for them. Roman Josi looks like a Norris Trophy version of himself again. And Ryan Johansson's played very well too. So can they keep it up? As long as they don't, as long as they play the same brand of game they're playing, I don't see why they can't make the playoffs if they stay committed to what's helped them be successful so far.
All right, now we're going to have you settle an argument, Kevin. You have the tie-breaking vote here. For weeks, for weeks, we've been arguing about the New York Rangers.
Yeah, okay.
Dan covers them every day.
Yeah, that's right.
He believes they're for real.
Yeah.
My counter-argument is I can't remember the last good team that they beat. Every time they play an elite team, they lose, oftentimes not very prettily, if that's a word. Where do you stand on the Rangers?
I'm very impressed with the Rangers' improvement. I understand where Dan's coming from. He covers them. He sees them a lot. I've been to a few of their games so far this year, pending my schedule. Been to about three or four, if I'm not mistaken. What impresses me about them, number one, is the goaltending, for the most part, has been outstanding. Shesterkin's in my Vezina Trophy conversation. And in fact, I have him in my top five. I think I had him as high as two. I'll do my net worth segment with Ryan Callahan when we get up to ESPN starting at 7 p.m. today on ESPN Plus. But Shesterkin's been excellent. And in the absence of him, Georgiev came in and looked like himself again too, which is great. So typically the goaltending's been outstanding. The D, how about Trouba? Like, Trouba's having himself a year. He's been really good. Like, I mean, really, really good. Physical, clean. He's scoring goals. He's making plays. He's boxing out in front of the net. All that to say, Adam Fox is elite. We know that already. And they've been – their brand that they're playing right now is so much better because it's more complete and they're harder to play against. Chris Kreider having himself a massive year. Panarin, one of the best players on the planet. Imagine what would happen if two things – and I'm gonna support Dan on this.
Yes.
What would happen, A, if they had centers that could win draws consistently? Because we know perennially the Rangers have been horrible in the faceoff circle as a group. So that's the first thing. And two, imagine what happens once Mika Zibanejad starts lighting the lamp again. Like, they've been able to win with Mika playing well, but not scoring the way Mika should and he's capable. And that's a testament to him. And he knows I say that all the time. He's such an elite shooter when he's going. But when you're chasing possession, when you don't win draws, it's tough. So the fact that they're this good right now, harder to play against, Ryan Reeves, everybody else, coach Gerard Gallant doing a great job. I don't know. I like their squad. I'm bullish on them too. I'm with you. I like what I see, the progression. You know, we always talk about progressions from teams, right, guys? Like, you guys talk about it all the time, where things are. We talk about their window, their progression. Right now, the Rangers are in a real nice progression. It's been, I got to say, it's been one of the pleasant surprises in the league this year, no doubt.
I agree with you 100%. Now, I wanted to ask you about a guy you know very well, Paul Maurice. He decides, which we don't see very often, to say, I'm not the right guy here anymore. I'm going to step down. It's not my team. It's not my time anymore. A, were you surprised at Paul Maurice's decision? And B, what did you make of the decision to step away from the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, I mean, it's huge. It was huge news. And as tight as I've been with him and am with him and, you know, kind of our Carolina Hurricanes kind of alum crew, I didn't hear any rumblings of this happening or coming down the pipe at all. None. And I'm telling you, none. I didn't hear one inkling. And not from whether I was going to share it publicly, but I even mean like just backwater with our, because as you guys know, 95% of the stuff that we get, we don't even share publicly, just out of respect for confidences and relationships, you know? And I would say that I had no clue this was coming. So in that respect, it was surprising. But from the standpoint of Paul choosing to do it the way in which he did, with the distinction, with class, with accountability, with self-awareness, with human equity, and all the other great traits that he has, I wasn't surprised in that respect. You know, I've played for a lot of different great coaches and assistants and goalie coaches and different people around the game. Paul is on my Mount Rushmore for among those people. His practices, his attention to detail, and he's somebody I played against in junior, both him and Jimmy Rutherford, when I was in the OHL back in the day. And then I played for them at the Top Prospects game. So that was long before playing for them in the NHL. I was always very impressed from afar, and even more so when I played for him. His communication skills, his people skills, his coaching, his tactics, his wisdom, his class, his distinction. We need more people like Paul Maurice in our game that are behind benches. And I think that there's and senior positions. And I think he'd be able to teach a lot of people a lot of things.
Do you believe that a message, even when it's a good message? I mean, the Jets have been successful throughout Paul's tenure. They haven't
no doubt
achieved the ultimate goal. But do you believe that a team just becomes inured to what a coach is saying?
Yeah, I think so. I think coaches are sometimes like parents. And, you know, I'm very fortunate to have two amazing parents and, you know, on the other side of our family as well now. My spouse's parents are awesome people as well too. And you're very lucky when you're in those situations because you can get so much wisdom day to day. You know what I mean? And life to life. Like, I'm 46. I just told you, my dad was just WhatsApping me. And we speak to both families all the time. And you're able to get so much wisdom. And I think from a playing standpoint, especially when you have a really good coach like Paul, who's such a great person as he is too, even with the likes of him, sometimes players will be like, oh, okay, I know. Or they'll give the quiet eye roll, or, you know, they'll be like, whatever, I know what to watch this guy on me for. But I got to tell you, man, good coaches are hard to come by. But regardless as to who you are, everybody has an expiration date in a certain environment. That's just really the nature of coaching at the pro level. I think for college, maybe sometimes that can be different. If you're Mike Krzyzewski or Jim Boeheim or, you know, people like that, or Gino Auriemma up here in Connecticut here, they may be exceptions. And even some point their time will come, you know, but all things being equal, it's just kind of a function, part and parcel of coaching, where players just at times just say, okay, I've heard enough of this person. And I give Paul a lot of credit because I, you know, having played in that Southeast division when they're in Atlanta, and a good chunk of that team when they first left Atlanta, I played against, there was a ton of skill and a real small amount of discipline. They always took penalties. There was a lot of selfishness. You know, the odd game, they could pepper you because they had skilled players, but the professionalism wasn't quite there. And he was really able to help mold and shape that group. And I agree with him in that he helped push the rock up the hill or up the mountain. And it's time for somebody else to take over. And I certainly think, and I hope, because that is a really talented group that they have there. And I'm curious to see how they're going to respond, how that group is going to respond. Very curious to see.
Yeah, no, it's good. They're definitely a team to watch coming out of this break. No question. Last one for you. It's on the Winter Classic. It's coming up Saturday night in Minnesota Target Field. Are you someone that still gets very excited about these outdoor events that the NHL puts on? And what do you make of this one? Because you got a first place team versus a third place team. They're right there at the top, tightly knit top at that Central Division.
I mean, I always get excited by these because they're spectacles. And I think the more spectacles that you can have, the better for our league. It amplifies the game, the markets, the fans, the coverage. It certainly is able to put them on the right stage and put our players on stages where the globe is watching, everybody around the world. So, you know, these games are huge in their respective markets. In this case, Mini, which, as you know, I think that they're an unofficial province of Canada because everybody in Minnesota plays hockey, or so they say. But I can tell you, anytime I land in Minnesota, any time of the year, I always see a hockey bag and baggage claim going around a carousel with sticks. Like, literally almost every time in broadcast travel, not in player travel. Obviously, we flew, you know, charter, but almost every time. So I know how much they live the game there, how much it means to them. They've had an amazing year all around. Big progression even from last year. Give them a lot of credit. Billy's done a really nice job. Coach Dean Evison, Cam Talbot's been great. Kaprizov is electric. He's been awesome for them. Everything that he should have been and more. And I just love their team. And then in the case of St. Louis, our man Craig Berube, Chiefs, done an awesome job with that group. They're even faster. I think that they're more dynamic than the team that won the Stanley Cup for them a few years back. Maybe a little more complete offensively, which is a testament to them. Binner looks like himself again in the net, and everybody's been great for that team. So, as you said, the fact that it's two central division rivals that are tightly knit, I think it'll be great. I'm of the mindset, contrary to a lot of the people that, you know, complain about water being wet or ice being icy, me being, you know, an optimist, I would love to see more of these games simply because you have more fans that are able to get a unique experience. The players are able to get a unique experience. And these are crown jewels, and they really do an outstanding job of, you know, buddies of mine that are in Germany that I grew up playing minor hockey with are talking about the game, okay? Guys in Switzerland, guys that are in Russia, Dave Nemirovsky, who I grew up playing with, and his brother Mike, who ironically lives in Germany, and Dave coaches in the KHL. You know, just to name drop some of these people that, you know, you're getting texts from these guys and these people around the world that played, that play, that coach, that are in the game. They're excited. So, you know, that means that it's, yes, Minnesota, yes, St. Louis, but it really is the global impact and the fact that the game's on such a big stage, and so are our players. So I would love to see more of that. And as I've said numerous times to Commissioner Bettman and Brian Jennings and Keith Wachtel, I coined Stadium Series Europe. And so if you ever see it happen, I don't know if I'm going to get a commission because I give out a lot of free concepts, but I don't know. But I hey, imagine this, right? Like, you're going to have this at Target Field, mini, land of 10,000 lakes, amazing hockey market, super vibrant. But why can't you have that at the stadium where Bayern Munich plays in Germany? Why can't you have it at Old Trafford where Manchester United play, or Etihad where Man City plays? And for all of our amazing fans and many of us that are hybrid sports fans in general, imagine, I'm getting on the plane from Newark or JFK or LaGuardia to go over. And imagine your fans in Switzerland, Russia, Germany, and the rest of the world getting the opportunity to see that type of a crown jewel over across the pond as well. You know what I mean? Like, there's a huge growth opportunity there. So this is the first time I've said it publicly, I think. So I got two witnesses in both you guys. You know, my agent, Paul Theofanis, is probably not going to like the fact that I put it out there without a commission baked in. You know what I mean? But I'm putting it out there. I think it'd be great for the game.
Well, Kevin, we'll advocate for you for sure when it comes to pass. And I will be the first one on the list to go wherever it is because it's going to be right. Awesome. You know, they played at the O2 Arena in London, one of the first Stadium Series games they ever did, and walking around that stadium, there were people from every country you could think of. The atmosphere, it's such a cheap flight to get there. So put it in Old Trafford right now. I'm there tomorrow, but thanks.
I'm there tonight. I'll just finish on this, but no, it's true, because, you know, a lot of people don't recognize, like, there's a lot of hybrid sports fans. You know, we have a lot of people that love Formula One and to NASCAR. You know, you have a lot of people that love football/soccer. You have a lot of people that love American football, baseball, you name it, that so many fans that I talk to and people and players and people around the game, as much as we love our sport, you know, there's a mutual admiration society too, where it's like hybrid, where we love these other sports too. So as we do by being able to play at Yankee Stadium or, you know, Citi Field or the Air Force Academy and all these amazing venues, Gillette Stadium, it'd be the same for us to be able to do that over across the pond. So thanks you guys for having me, man. And thanks to all the fans out there that listen to you guys and that watch us and tune in, and happy holidays, and hope everybody stays healthy and safe.
Always so good to catch up with Kevin Weeks. There may not be a guy in this league that is more excited about the game of hockey than Kevin. And there's a lot of guys in this league, including you and I, who are excited to talk hockey, but Kevin's the best in every gig he does, NHL Network, ESPN, NHL radio, a couple of times he's been on with us. You always learn something new and you're fired up. And after him talking about the Winter Classic, Dan, I'm even more fired up to leave on Thursday to get there to freeze my you-know-what off and see some great hockey, because it's going to be great hockey.
And I think that's, you know, we talk so much about the event, right, Sean? Like, the event and the look and the feel and, you know, how they, you know, what the NHL does to really celebrate the market and where the games are at and how the look of the field, the design, how it plays on TV, all the camera angles, and TNT is doing the Winter Classic for the first time this year. There's so much of that, and it's so great, and it's such a big part of the whole big event feel of it. But when you come down to what's going to happen on that ice surface, it's two really good teams, two teams that are battling it out in the Central Division, two teams that have some superstar power to them too. You know, I mean, we don't always think of the Minnesota Wild or the St. Louis Blues as having a superstar power to them, but you look at the way Vladimir Tarasenko is playing and Ryan O'Reilly is playing, and, you know, with St. Louis and Kirill Kaprizov, obviously, with Minnesota. I mean, there's a lot there to really sink your teeth into just for the hockey alone. If this game was a standalone game on a Saturday night at XL Energy Center or Enterprise Center, it would be a must-watch game for me because it's two really good teams going at each other. And now you put it on, you know, front and center national TV, you know, outdoors, Target Fields, you know, with the whole backdrop of, you know, the state of hockey. It's fascinating stuff.
Yeah, and I know you talked to a bunch of people about Kaprizov for a program piece for the Winter Classic. By the way, anybody going to the Winter Classic, buy the program, read Dan's wonderful words. but I'm so excited to see him. I've seen him on TV tons of times already, but he's one of those players I've yet to see live. And we all know it's a different experience to see a player live, to be able to see how he moves on the ice, away from the puck, away from the camera. You know, you see him come into the camera and he's flying and, you know, he's taking on defenders and everything else. But now you're going to get to see how he gets into those positions and, you know, the way that he kind of executes his attacks. And to me, that's always the most exciting part of seeing a dynamic player like that live, like Connor McDavid's speed, to see it in person at practice, in, you know, the pregame warmups in the game is so much different than watching it on TV. You watch it and you appreciate it and you know he's faster than everybody else, but then you see it in person and it almost takes your breath away. And I think Kaprizov is one of those players, and I can't wait to see him.
Yeah. And the Wild players, they absolutely love him. They've really generated a lot of their energy and their creativity off of him. I remember in speaking with Matt Dumba for that Kaprizov feature, you know, he had a great line. He said he went from dollar Bill Kirill to big Bill Kirill in a matter of a year. Right. I mean, so basically this guy came in and you heard all the hype and you heard all everything that was going on with him in Russia. And then there was a curiosity for the Wild players of how is he going to fit in? We can't wait to get him, but is it going to all work out? And then bang, he comes out and he just makes this, he just brings so much life, so much energy to a team that really desperately needed a guy like this, Sean. I mean, they didn't have a player like this since Marian Gaborik, right? A guy who could just do it and you would be must watch. And that was Gaborik absolutely in his prime early in his career with the Minnesota Wild. And he just has brought so much life and energy to this team. And the players on the team gravitate to him. They gravitate to him. He is, you know, still learning the language. He's still adjusting in many ways to North America, but his hockey sense, his hockey IQ, his skill, how he handles the ice, the smaller ice surface, the creativity he has, the passion he has, and also the way he practices. This is the stuff that I was talking with Jared Spurgeon, who's not going to play in the game, unfortunately, because of injury. Matt, Dean Evason, their coach, and all of, they're just raving about this and how he has been the guy that really has taken the Wild to the next level, because they didn't have the guy that could just do it for them on a one-off. And he can now on basically whenever he wants.
Timing wise, I can never figure it out again, because math is not my strong point, but I believe this game in Russia is going to be very viewable, right? It's either going to be an afternoon game there or whatever it might be. And even if it's late, people are going to be staying up, because you have Kaprizov and then you have the Russian line for the Blues with Tarasenko, who you mentioned, Buchnevich, like, and that line is absolutely flying. And they've kind of brought Tarasenko back into the fight a little bit.
They really have. And you hope that Ivan Barbashev, who's part of that line, can play, because he's right now in COVID protocol. It goes back to the 23rd, so pre-Christmas for this one. So you hope he can get back and play. But they have brought Tarasenko into the fight. One more thing, Sean, that I wanted to mention about Kaprizov before I go further on Tarasenko is Dean Evason coached the Washington Capitals. He was an assistant coach with the Washington Capitals from 2005 to 2012. He was there for the first 6-7 years of Alex Ovechkin's career. He said there is absolutely 100% a comparison between the infectious way personality and skill and talent and how he plays on the ice from Ovechkin to Kaprizov. And it made a huge difference. We know that for the Washington Capitals, and it's making a big difference for the Minnesota Wild. That comparison exists. Now, I mean, is Kaprizov going to turn into what Ovechkin has? Let's slow down, right? Evason wasn't comparing who they are as, you know, where they rank as players, all that stuff. But it was just the way, you know, the energy and that infectious energy that he brought to the team. Ovechkin had it. Ovechkin still has it. Kaprizov clearly does have it. And I think that's an important point here when we're talking about Kaprizov to give a little bit of a comparison of what we mean. And this is a guy who is coaching the Wild now and coached the Capitals then. So he has a better understanding than anybody of exactly what that is. And he made that comparison himself.
Guys like that love the big stage, right? And this is going to be his first opportunity to be on that big stage. And he'll want to do something special. So it just makes for a great night.
And you brought up the Tarasenko thing, I think is really important too, from the Blues. By the way, like that line, like I said, we're hoping that Barbashev can play in the game. Even if he can't, Buchnevich has been a revelation for them. He is, as he was for the Rangers. I mean, he is an exceptional player all over the ice. He's got 29 points right now. Tarasenko's got 29 points right now. You're not hearing about trade requests and this and that with Tarasenko. You're hearing about a guy who is fully engaged, happy, playing with guys who motivate him. You know, look, not for nothing, but he doesn't want to be the third wheel on a Russian line, right? He wants to be the top guy on a Russian line. And that's what I mean. That's what you mean when you brought him into the fight. Like, he's in. He's all in, and he wants to be the best guy now. And so does Barbashev, but so does Buchnevich. And that's making that line roll right now. And so if they can be together in a Winter Classic, that's must watch. That's a must watch line, and it's a really hard line for the Minnesota Wild to have to shut down.
Well, I think we've sold the Winter Classic now.
Yeah, I think so.
If you're on the fence, I hope you're no longer on the fence, because it's it's going to be great. And you know, the last thing on it, and I don't know what's planned for all the hoopla and everything else. I've kind of kept myself out of that conversation. I want to be a little surprised. I know a few things, but I think back to the last time that the last two times we've been on outdoors with fans, right? And you were at both of them. It was Dallas for the last Winter Classic mm-hmm. that we did, and there were pig races.
Yes,
there on were the pig field and right. steer and lassoing and everything else that went on. And then, you know, we go to the last outdoor game we played before the pandemic was at Air Force, and there was an F-16 on the field, and there were runways. So now you go to the state of hockey and, you know, the 1,000 lakes, 10,000 lakes, whatever it is, like the possibilities are endless. And what Steve Mayer is going to do with that canvas is going to be amazing. Like, it's going to be brilliant, and without even knowing all the intricacies of it. And it's going to look great on TV.
And that's what also makes these events, and I don't want to call them games, I want to call them events, special and unique. You know, and I brought this up in a mailbag last week, Sean. It was just somebody asked me, are the outdoor games, you know, getting stale, basically? You know, they lost their luster, and they haven't, because the market themselves is celebrated. So they're all unique, and this one's going to be that way. And I don't think we're going to have to worry about weather. Prime time, and it's supposed to be a high of 1 degree Fahrenheit during the day in Minnesota. So you're going to get it's going to be cold. It's going to be legit outdoor hockey. Yes, on an NHL rink. But I, you know, the canvas that Steve Mayer paints behind it is actually, it's always interesting and always terrific. So definitely something to look forward to. But by the way, so we're going to get that. We're going to get this Saturday night, and then we're going to move on, and there's going to be that run up then to the All-Star game. We're going to be a month away from the All-Star game, basically, which is in Las Vegas, and All-Star voting is going on right now on NHL.com. Connor McDavid for the captaincy, leads the Pacific Division. Alex Ovechkin leads the Metropolitan Division. Austin Matthews currently leads in the Atlantic Division. And it's a bit of a race here between Nathan MacKinnon and the aforementioned Kirill Kaprizov in the Central Division. So that voting is going on right now.
Yeah, and you can go to NHL.com and you can make your picks until the voting closes. And then once the captains are selected, hockey operations will name the rest of the rosters. Make sure your voice is heard, just like a real election. You can't complain about the results if you don't vote and stuff the ballot box. Here, you can legitimately stuff the ballot box. Yeah. Presidential election, I don't recommend it, but here you can do it. So let your voice be heard and make sure your favorite player goes to Vegas.
Yeah, no, and look, I'm looking forward to that as well. Hope all things can go well between now and then, that we can all be there healthy and safe in Las Vegas for a celebration of the game. No question about it. We got the celebration of the game Saturday in Minnesota. And if you haven't judged by now, we're now at the end of this episode. And I think you can tell that Sean and I are pretty darn excited about the break being over and NHL hockey being back. At least I am, Sean. I mean, three games tonight, seven tomorrow, Winter Classic coming up. We're back.
Hockey's back. And for me, there's no place better to celebrate the new year than on the road with a big spectacle game. Like, you've been doing it since the first one. I've been doing it since the second one. Haven't missed too many. So, again, it's another step in what's been a really difficult year. Hopefully getting back towards normalcy as we deal with what's a new normal. But there's these touchstones that we have that remind us of what came before. Our life's changed. And this is one of them. You know, this is an opportunity to do something special, to see a lot of people you don't see during the year, and to celebrate the game with people who love it at all levels. So, yeah, it's going to be great.
Definitely is. So be excited for it. Allow yourself the excitement. And that's it. So everybody stay safe and enjoy the hockey.